Hoga Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Well, well, well. A little special Sunday programming. No Bears game. Nobody complaining about that. Jared Payton, I haven't seen you in a while, man. Look at you.
It's good to be back, man. It is good to be back.
Where Jared and I don't often spend a lot of time before the show together, but normally when I get here, you're always sitting in the green room, you're watching football, you're watching baseball, you're watching something. But you were late coming in today because you've been upstairs breaking down Mitchell Trubisky tape, which we'll get to in a second. And there's an explosive NFL story out there about one of their owners, 81 years old, Jerry Richardson in Carolina. Big time guy in the NFL, and I want to get into that to start the show. I just want to remind you, Porter Moser of Loyola will be here at 4:35. Adam Hoge, of course, covered the Bears yesterday up in Detroit, 3:35. What'd you learn on the tape there, JP?
Just breaking down the interceptions. The first, trying to see what he saw and watching just the film after the fact, and I kind of let it marinate for a couple hours and then break it down. First interception, definitely, he just overthrew his receiver. He let the ball go, but you start to look at where the corner was too, in between of where he wanted to throw. It's more of a touch throw, and he, when you see him release, his feet weren't under him. But the one thing that we have seen from him is that he's good on throwing on the run. This one just oversailed. And then his second interception was what I saw him do most of the game, of looking through his progressions and looking off different safeties and holding linebackers, which I saw at times. He didn't do on that play down as they're knocking on the door, down 20-3. He needed to hold that safety by looking it off to the bunch set that he had with the three receivers on the right side. He didn't.
The old bunch set.
Yeah, he decided just to look at what was going on and just was going, I'm throwing. And with guys in the NFL, they'll make that play every single time. So the third one, he wasn't throwing the slant route. He was throwing to the tight end, and we don't know whose problem that is. We're not in the meeting room, so we don't know who that one's on. It looked like it was on the tight end.
So is Mitchell Trubisky a good quarterback, Jared Payton, as we start the show? Big question here.
He can be, but I think it's still up in the air. And I think what we're seeing right now, Carm, is we're going to get a baseline of who he is as a person. I had to go get my eyes checked the other day, and they gave me a baseline.
You're squinting a lot right now.
Well, I do that anyway because of concussions and lights. Sometimes when it's too bright, I squint.
Okay. But you want me to dim the lights?
No. They wanted to give me a baseline.
Okay.
To see where I am and then look and see what's going on with my eyes as time goes on the next three, 6 months. That's what we're going to do with Mitchell. We're putting this little baseline in for him, and we'll see how he develops in 2018. It's what we got to do.
So, of course, I do Hampton OB with Kaz after all the games.
Are they ragging on him?
Well, they're mostly ragging on John Fox. And
why?
Because John Fox is
he is
awful.
Who we thought he was.
Well, I know.
You thought he was going to be better?
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't.
Not yesterday, not this year, but when he got here, I didn't think he was going to go down as arguably the worst coach, at least record-wise, in the history of the Bears. Now, they might not be that because they beat the Bengals and they got a good chance, I would think, of beating the winless Browns at home a week from today. But I didn't think it was going to be this bad. I most definitely thought it was going to be an upstep from Mark Trestman.
I did too, but
that didn't happen.
Still, you have to look at the roster though, Carm. I mean, it's not all. Listen, I think there's a lot of blame that should go John Fox's way, but it goes. Not just him.
They've been favored 7 times in the John Fox era, and he's 0-7. Win one of them? How about one? Just win one. How about one of the 7 times you're favored?
I get what you're saying. Does he not have his team prepared most of the time, especially in the second half of the season? Yes, I've seen that.
They didn't look prepared yesterday.
He's not the one out there making plays. The guys deserve some of that blame as well.
Yeah, sure.
I don't see that I want Fox to say.
I think it's unfair to put it all in his head, too.
Thank you.
I would agree with that. However, I can't really find any overwhelming reason to defend him. Same thing with Ryan Pace.
See?
Same thing with Ryan Pace.
I mean, he's the one shopping for the groceries, man. That's what it comes down to. He's not missed on a lot. He's done well in the draft. Free agency, you're going to miss because normally guys that get into free agency, there's something wrong with them, injuries or something like that. And we've seen that so far in the time that, you know, he's been here and been the GM of this team.
Who has he hit on in free agency outside of Akeem Hicks?
Akeem Hicks has been good.
You got anyone
else? Danny Trevathan has looked good when healthy, but we knew that that's an issue.
I'll give him Danny Trevathan. Sure, that's fair.
Jarrell Freeman when he was on the football field and not suspended.
Can't say that's a win. Who has he hit on in free agency?
I think free agency has been
awful.
His downfall.
I mean, it's one after another.
He's done well.
Sort of.
What do you mean, sort of? The guys that have been making plays so far this season are all young guys.
Okay, well let's talk about that. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
all right, Kevin White. Let's start there.
Okay. You want to go to the obvious one? Yes.
Well,
jury is still out.
The jury is not out. It was awful. Awful.
It's not over yet.
It's over.
It's not over yet.
It should be okay. It should be over.
Okay. Let's go.
It's an
Cody White here.
He's okay. He's okay.
Eddie Goldman?
He's okay. I just don't... There's nothing... Look, I like
Jordan Howard.
Okay. Great pick.
Tariq Cohen. What do you mean?
He's a good pick.
It's
a good pick. I can't take... I don't want to take Tariq Cohen.
You know what the problem is?
I'm looking for a dynamic... superstar playmaker guy.
But these guys are still young. We have it. The guy that was supposed to be that was Kevin White.
Yeah.
From where he was selected, he was supposed to be that guy, and it hasn't happened.
Leonard Floyd, too.
Yes. Injuries, yeah. It's been an issue.
But Leonard Floyd coming into the NFL, a lot of people thought he'd be undersized, would struggle to stay healthy. That's sort of proven to be the case.
Flashes
are there.
Yeah.
And look, his drafts have been better than his free agency. He gave up three picks and swap to move up to get Mitchell Trubisky. I understand what's going on here. I get it. But you go deep into the scouts, breaking him down. He has trouble throwing to his left. That seems fairly significant to me. His mechanics, his footwork, his arm slot, all of it is a work in progress. He needs some coaching.
He does. He needs coaching. And I think that's the hardest thing that I have an issue with in trying to process through, like, writing my presser, which I'm going to post tomorrow on WGNradio.com, is the fact of who's going to be that next coach. We don't know. So as much as I love watching these young rookies make plays, I still don't know who's going to be the coach. And what's to say that the next coach is going to be the guy? Because from what my past has shown me, we haven't figured out how to select that guy.
And if you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200, that's our phone number. Adam Hogue will be with us at 3:30. I'd love to see him. I'd love to say that, look, I think Trubisky's great. I think there's a solid foundation there. And Jordan Howard's only going to his third year next year. And Tariq Cohen can be a Darren Sproles cool playmaker who will give you big plays at the times when you need him. That's all great. But I still don't see one guy, or I see a minor formation of potentially some hope, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way I could say that. They are. I think anybody who says they're on the right path. No, you really can't say that. You really can't.
Everything for the Bears, especially on offense.
Yes.
And we'll get to it is in how the success of their offense depends on one thing. We'll get to that.
Okay. We'll do that. And if you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you. Also, Adam Hogue at 3:30. And the explosive story in the NFL coming next, 720 WGN. WGN 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Talking Bears here. All right, we'll do this. Let's service the people for a second.
Let's do
and I'm going to get to the NFL story of the day, which is disturbing but not surprising. I would say, Mike, you want to talk about Kendall Wright? Go ahead, man. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
Yeah, definitely he could have caught that ball. If he would have jumped up, I saw him pull his arms in. When I saw that receiver catch the ball in the end zone after the interception over the defensive back, when I saw Wright, he pulled his arms. He had alligator arms. He didn't even try to catch that ball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you start to look at it, the second interception, listen, regardless of the situation, Trubisky did not look off that safety who was sitting right there. And I just don't know how he missed him to not hold him to look at what was going on the right side. You have an opportunity to either throw the ball away, but that is not a throw of trying to fit it in that window. I don't know if the receiver can make a play to even stop it because of where he was in front of the ball to make the play. I still think it's an interception regardless.
Well, like I said, the one I'm talking about is on the sideline.
Oh, the one on the sideline.
That one was high.
You talking about the first one?
Yeah,
He let that one jump. I know, but he let that one sail. I don't know if Michael Jordan catches that ball, man. I'm being honest with you.
I think he could have caught it. If you watch him, he pulled his arms in instead of jumping up for that ball.
I'm going to watch it again right now.
I thought it was Bellamy at first because I know how he is when someone's around. He looks like T.O. when someone's around him.
So. I love it.
Mike, appreciate you. Thanks for calling, man.
All right, you guys have a great day.
You as well. 312-981-7200. I find it interesting that Kendall Wright was finally discovered late in the year. Yeah. And I also find it interesting how Dontrell Inman looks like the greatest wide receiver ever one week, and then they don't target him the next week, and there's just no consistency. And there was an interesting thoughts out there via the Twitter about Dowell Loggins and him thinking that he was going to be in line to be the head coach of the Chicago Bears.
Whoa.
Dude, who's Greg Gabriel put that out on Twitter yesterday.
Wow.
And I'm like, is that possible that he actually thought that? By the way, they're real. They're Chicago. Watch Dan Pone say Lauren Jiggets, Larry Podesh, Robin Baumgarten get real in the morning with the WGN-TV morning news team weekdays from 4 to 10. When are you on, JP?
I am on at 4 p.m.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, you can watch me every day.
Let's start your day there, too. All right, here you go. Jerry Richardson team, 81 years old, the owner of the Carolina Panthers. There's a piece out there today by Sports Illustrated talking about Jerry doing things that Jerry should not be doing. And it reads like this. Friday was jeans day when most staffers at the Carolina Panthers team offices would wear denim to work. The female employees knew what that meant. As the team's owner, Jerry Richardson, made his rounds on his way to his spacious office, he would ask women to turn around so he could admire their backsides. Then, in his rolling southern drawl, he'd offer comments drawing from store one-liners he'd recycle each week. Among those heaviest in the rotation, show me how you wiggle to get those jeans up. I bet you had to lay down on your bed to fit into those jeans. Did you step into those jeans, or did you have to jump into them?
Whoa.
Right. Now, and there's Sports Illustrated writes that they learned that on multiple occasions, there were complaints for sexual harassment against female employees, also for a racial slur against an African-American employee. And he has paid out four people who have left the organization who have non-disclosure agreements. So here's a guy who's 81 who is one of the signature, I'd call him like top three owners in the NFL. He's up there. Jerry Jones, Jerry Richardson,
Bob Kraft.
I mean,
he's in the top five.
This is a big dude. He made his money in the fast food industry, Hardee's, and he was big with Denny's, who isn't exactly. They've also had their own racial settlements. That was a huge thing about 15 years ago with the way African Americans were being treated going into Denny's, made to pay before they sat down. That type of crazy stuff was going on.
Never heard of that.
Oh no, it's all. No, it's all in there. And so here's another guy. Things change slowly, right? But now we got this avalanche that is just spinning down, and people are getting swallowed up. And sometimes you hear the reports, and it's like, that one sounds a little bit fishy. But this one, when you have four times that you have done non-disclosure agreements to pay people off for whatever you said or done in the workplace, there is a lot of smoke where there is fire, all of it with him. And so, and this is a big thing for the NFL because they always protect their own. The NBA had Donald Sterling, and they pushed him out.
They pushed him out.
So this one's going to bear worth watching here.
When you start to think about it, and we're starting to see more and more people speaking up and speaking out, I knew it was just a matter of time before it hit the NFL. Because you started to see it kind of trickle out with earlier in the week with NFL Network and then ESPN and stuff like that with all the reports that came out. And I said, it's just a matter of time before we start to see this jump into more of these sporting teams and organizations. And Carm, I mean, you said it. There's a lot of from being on the outside looking in of all these different situations that we get a chance to see through social media and the internet. It's a lot of people that have been sitting and holding on to stuff for a long period of time, man, that have been deeply affected by all this stuff. And now that people are getting a chance to be able to have their voices heard and not feel scared.
Right. And apparently Richardson was doing things like he would offer to shave his female employees' legs.
That's weird.
It's so weird, right?
It's weird, man.
And he would ask to go to lunch with his employees, and then he would want to drive. And when they would get in the car, as a Southern gentleman, he would insist on buckling their seatbelt for him. So he would have to reach across him and, you know, touch whatever Jerry was touching, apparently, as he was making sure that their seatbelt was buckled. It also writes here that Richardson was referred to by all as simply Mr., no surname required. When Mr. swings by and asks you to lunch, you accept the invitation even if you've already eaten. When he confuses your name, you don't correct him. When the Panthers hold staff meetings, you know to arrive early. Punctuality is a core Richardson virtue. That's nothing wrong with that. I'm big on punctuality. That's cool.
Me too.
Sit as close as possible to Mr.'s position, a bar stool in high top in the middle of the room. Even before you park your car in the lot, you feel Mr. towering over you. On one occasion, they've got like some 13-foot statue of him outside of Bank of America Stadium. So, you know, and they write here, for a time at least, the billionaire was perhaps the most powerful NFL owner behind Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft. He's headed various NFL committees. He's co-chaired a search committee that selected Roger Goodell as commissioner. Mm. He's perhaps best known for leadership in labor disputes, where he got into it with Peyton Manning. And, you know, when you think about it, like, it's actually a great story. Like, Carolina, the way they're called, the Carolina Panthers, it's not North Carolina, it's not South Carolina. He brought that whole region together around a football team. I'm going to bring the NFL to the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. And I think it's cool that they're the Carolina Panthers. And he's got Ron Rivera, who's his head coach. That's a diversity move.
Yeah.
Cam Newton is the face of that franchise, African-American. So it's not... When you look at the entire picture, we don't have all bad going on here.
But bad is bad.
But the bad apparently is bad.
It really is.
Yeah. And
I'm still upset that the Jags and Carolina got teams. Because remember, my dad was trying to get the team in St. Louis back in that day, and it fell through.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Still a little bit bitter about that, but I probably wouldn't be in Chicago if that was the case.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, would have been first black owner.
How close was that?
It was really close.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they had everything stenciled out, like the jerseys and all that stuff. I still have a lot of those drawings. You would laugh. The logo actually is now they were like the St. Louis Stallions, and it was going to be the same logo as the Denver Broncos is now.
34 was going to own the St. Louis Stallions?
It was going to be with the team, yeah, with the group that was trying to get it. It fell through, though.
Yeah, you crazy. Would not.
We're going.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's
a little. That brought back memories.
Yeah, that's just an interesting little.
This doesn't make sense to me. Why is it? I shouldn't say why is it. I kind of understand. But the money and power thing over people, it's huge. Well, it's like you know that if you have something and you're a person that is working your butt off to get what you got and to provide for your family and you do anything to, you know, to maybe tick off somebody, or you're not going to say anything because you're trying to keep doing what you're doing. It's like money and power. It's crazy.
Well, see, and here's my proposal, and I'd be willing to do this. I would like to teach a class, and it would be offered to extremely rich, powerful, tons of dough people. One of them's in the window right now. John the Coach Cone. And he doesn't need this training. But the training that I'm offering is when you have that money where you can tell anybody that you possibly, you know, you don't have to, you don't have, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't mean that you get to act, for lack of a better word, like an animal and just do whatever and just follow every urge you have. You
can't.
And I'd also like to name, which makes people uncomfortable, look, we all have odd urges going on all the time. Men and women are attracted to each other. And teachers and students are attracted to each other. But there's a certain thing where we actually become a human being and you learn that you make choices. That is not appropriate. But for whatever reason, when people get all this money, they tend to forget what's important.
They forget about what's reality.
And what can you and can't do. So I would teach these wealthy people, it is normal that you have this desire.
Yes.
That you want to reach across and buckle in this beautiful 25-year-old seatbelt. It's wrong. You can't do it. I don't care how much money you have. That would be the class. Right, I think that class needs to be taught, honestly.
I'm with you because it makes sense. But also, if you look at it in this terms of just even being famous or being, you know, playing sports, most people just feel like they're invincible. Like when I remember talking to guys and watching guys in the NFL just do things, and not to do with this subject, but just in their life of like going out and partying, thinking that they were Superman, invincible. Right. Like nothing's going to happen to me. I'll go out to the bar, drink, and this, and I'll go home. If I get pulled over, you know what? The cops going to let me go. You feel entitled. Like, listen, who's going to tell me no? And that's the problem there.
It's the
it's not right.
Right. It's the you are not Superman. I don't care how talented or how much money you are or how many people would pay you for your autograph class.
Respect. It comes down to it. Respect.
Right. I don't care what everybody else thinks about you. What do you think of you? And what do you think of you taking advantage of your employees?
How do you even feel like that's right?
Right.
I just have a hard time with people when they do stuff to not think that there's going to be consequences, that you can look and just be blinded by money and the fame and the power, that nothing, this is never going to surface.
And that's the other part of the lesson, by the way. Hey, Jerry Richardson, he's 81 years old. He never thought he was going to get in trouble. One of the most powerful people in the NFL. Now, his whole legacy
is going to be on this.
It's going to be tarnished. He very well could get kicked out of the league. We'll see.
The internet's crazy.
The stuff comes back, man.
Internet's crazy, man. It's the next Google search of what's up there is what people are going to remember about you.
Risk reward.
Kids out there, yes, watch what you post. They're outside the window. We're letting them know right now. Right. Be good to people.
Internet is written in ink.
Oh, man.
Not pencil. All right, let's get into the newsroom. 3:32. Oh, we got a break? Okay, Dan, let's take a quick timeout. 720 WGN.
And we've got complete confidence in Mitch. And, you know, sometimes, you know, quarterbacks have those days. They'll have better days. You know, it wasn't all on him. You know, I think at the end of the day, we just didn't play well enough, you know, all of us included.
Term recommendation. Excuse me. Wow. I cannot get rid of this cough. It's driving me nuts. I don't even know when my mic is on and mic is off. Term recommendation. Go to WGNradio.com and read Adam Hoge's post on yesterday's game. His lead. It was just a football game against a division team that was in playoff contention. That's a terrible lead. Really bad. But he owns that and says it's what John Fox said. It's a good rip session of John Fox and Marcus Wheaton and the Bears as a whole. And Adam Hoge joins us now on 720 WGN on his own show. Jared Payton, Mark Carmen here with you till 5:30 in advance of Blackhawks hockey, the Minnesota Wild at the United Center tonight. Hoagie, you're ready for this John Fox thing to be over. I can smell it. I can taste it. I can feel it.
Two more games. It's Browns week, baby. You guys excited for Browns week?
I am excited for Browns week.
Christmas Eve action. Browns with a chance to win their first game of the season at Soldier Field.
Nah,
it's going to be great.
Nah, come on. Come on, Hoge, man. This is the season. Both of us. I see you on a weekly basis at Hallis Hall. This is, you talk about roller coasters. It's been so up and down. You don't know how to gauge this team. But I do want to ask you, how are you gauging Mitchell Trubisky as you start to look at his starts and his 3-interception day, but also 300 yards passing day as well on Saturday?
Well, you know what's interesting, and right before I get to Mitch, it's you look at the teams the Bears have actually beat this year, And they beat the Steelers, who are 11-2. They beat the Ravens, who aren't a great team, but a winning team. And then they beat the Panthers, who look really, really good now. I just watched them beat the Packers with Aaron Rodgers. And so I think that kind of suggests that they're... At least you put that in the list of reasons for optimism for next year with the new coaching staff and what we've seen from Mitch Trubisky so far, which I still think is way more good than bad. Look, Rodgers just threw three interceptions in a game against the Panthers, okay? He also had three touchdowns and looked great. There's a lot of – every one of these quarterbacks, it's like
– Easy. Just making sure. Are we comparing? We're not doing.
No. Hogue, before you get into it, I just want to throw this in as well, just before, because I know where you're going. But don't you, you can add this in. Don't you think that you were going to see a game like this with the more high volume throws? Because we haven't seen him throw it a lot. So this now, he's throwing 30 some passes. You're going to see mistakes like this.
Right. That's what I was getting at. Any one of these quarterbacks in the league that throws the ball a lot is going to throw interceptions. Yesterday, those three interceptions were in the second half when the great majority of Trubisky's passing attempts occurred. And he had a lot of really, really impressive throws in that second half, too, with bad wide receivers and no running game whatsoever. So there was a lot of good. There was a lot of bad, too. And I think, you know, you look at those three interceptions, one of them was miscommunication. The other one was an overthrow, which unfortunately is going to happen sometimes. And then, you know, I look at the one in the end zone as just a rookie who didn't, you know, he didn't see the safety. And so, I mean, we can make a lot of excuses, but I still think there's no reason to panic over Trubisky yet.
So we talked about this yesterday, and you're still on board, and I think most people are, that there's no reason to believe that Mitchell Trubisky can't at least be a credible, solid, middle-of-the-road, at worst, NFL quarterback. However, I think it is becoming incredibly clear that if he's going to get to where he gets to, he needs to be coached a lot better. Otherwise, it's not going to get to where Ryan Pace envisioned. And I'm assuming that he probably knows that, and that's the number one reason why Ryan Pace is going to be out. Not Ryan Pace, why John Fox, Dowell Loggins are going to be out the door come Jan 1, Jan 2, Jan 3. Was that fair to say?
Yeah, and that's why I had to remind a lot of people that last week, after they had the very impressive win in Cincinnati, and there's, you know, this fear that it was going to save John Fox's job. No, I mean, think about how much of Ryan Pace's job is riding on this quarterback, who obviously needs much, much better coaching than he's getting. So, absolutely, I think that's the number one reason why you're probably going to need a change. Now, I have a question for you guys, because I was just, you know, I don't get to sit around and watch football on Sundays very often, okay? So, a lot of thoughts going through my head today. The Texans are now 4-10. A lot of friction down there in Houston between Rick Smith, the GM, and Bill O'Brien, the head coach. If they made a change, what do you guys think about Bill O'Brien as a head coaching candidate?
I mean, he's... I was talking about that last week. I think if that's the case, you're looking at a guy that you know likes to develop quarterbacks. So I think it would be a great mesh. I think the biggest mesh for me, Hogue, is to see how him and Ryan Pace kind of will work together. Because if they can do that together, then everything will, it could actually be a happy marriage. But other than that, the situation that I've seen him in so far with John Fox, it doesn't seem like that. I don't think there's tension. I just don't know if there's a truly relationship there when you talk about football, of like decisions that are being made. If they could do that together, I wouldn't be opposed of it. Why not?
The only thing that I would say about that is, you know, he started out the season with Tom Savage as a starting quarterback. Why didn't he wanted to wait on Deshaun Watson?
I mean, come on.
We learned with Mitch Trubisky, there's just a hesitancy to throw these guys in too early. To his credit, and we don't know how much of that came down from above, too. To his credit, they made that change in the middle of that first game. I mean, it was obvious right away, and they made that change. The Bears waited till week 5 to make their change, even though that was obvious the first day of training camp who the best quarterback on the roster was. So I'm not going to bash Bill O'Brien for that. I don't know that they have any kind of relationship, him and Ryan Pace. I haven't really dug into it. It's just something I kind of thought of today. But I've always liked Bill O'Brien as a coach, and I think that he has been given a raw deal in terms of quarterbacks in Houston. And part of that's probably on him, because I would think that they rely on him to evaluate these quarterbacks. But you know, when he had Deshaun Watson, he looked like a pretty good coach for a few weeks.
He did.
So give if he can get Mitch, if he's the guy for who can get the most out of Mitch Trubisky, and I don't know, I like him as a coach. I think it's an interesting fit.
I'm on board, man. Give me Bill. I'll take Bill O'Brien at the end of the day. I just want to throw a little bit of a. He's not. None of them. I don't. I mean, who do you think is involved here, Adam? Do you have any idea?
In terms of a potential candidates?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I think you have to at least give Pat Shurmur a phone call, right? He's the offensive coordinator in Minnesota right now. I've heard some really good things about him and just really how that whole organization has been run this year. The way that the apparently Mike Zimmer like never puts the pads on at all in practice, and they're they've stayed mostly healthy, I believe, up there. But really, I think the argument there is Case Keenum.
I mean,
Pat Shurmur's turned some Case Keenum from a nobody into. I mean, they can't even play Teddy Bridgewater. It's incredible what's going on up there in Minnesota. So I think that's a guy you got to talk to. Those two guys in Philadelphia, Frank Reich, John DeFilippo, we talked about them a lot. I just, the one thing I just want to caution everyone is we have to learn from the Mark Trestman era. You can't just hire an offensive guy. Yeah. If you can get an offensive guy, great. But first and foremost, you have to hire a head coach. You have to hire somebody who can be the CEO of a locker room and manage a locker room and not just coach the offense, but the entire team. And special teams, too. Let's not forget about special teams. That's why I love Dave Tobe as a head coaching candidate. I don't know why special teams coordinators don't get more looks. They deal with players on both sides of the football, and many times special teams coordinators act like an assistant head coach in terms of responsibilities off the field, running day-to-day, putting practice schedules together. They're way more involved than usually defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators are. So Dave Tobe is a guy I would look at, too. He knows the Bears organization inside and out.
One of the things that jumped out to me at watching Saturday, Hoke, is over the past few years, the last 2 years, we've seen Jordan Howard be able to kind of slice and dice through that Lions defense and get the run game going, especially in the first outing from the beginning of the year, I mean, a couple weeks ago. That when the run game's not going on, man, this offense just looks, it's out of sync. They can't do the things that they want to do. And it was just, I know the Lions, they weren't able to run the football, but on the flip side against that Bears defense, they were actually able to establish the run, which helped out their potent passing game.
You know, the Bears only had 7 plays in the first quarter of this game, which was part of the problem. The Lions controlled the football for 10 minutes and 48 seconds of the first quarter. But part of that was because the Bears went 3-and-out twice. And part of that was they threw the ball 5 out of their first 7 plays. So I'm sure the explanation at House Hall this week will be like, well, we're just going with what the coverage was giving us, and they're stacking the box, and so we threw the ball. But I mean, we know that this team can't move the ball offensively when they don't establish the run. So for them to come out of the first quarter with exactly 2 running plays, Jordan Howard no gain on the first and 1 yard on the second, so 1 rushing yard after the first quarter. I mean, I think once again it gets to the coaching standpoint of it. How is that your first play of the game is a throw to Jordan Howard who can't catch the ball? In fact, that's how you started the game last week, and he dropped it. Now in this case, he did catch it, and you actually got a first down on the first play. But from there, it was 3-and-out, 3-and-out. So once again, I think we can question the way they came out offensively from a game plan.
I would like to. I just want to remind everybody with the Bears and Browns next Sunday on Christmas Eve. Right now, you can sit upper tank for $30. You can sit in the 300 level at about they'll call it the 35-yard line for $60. And you can sit at the 40-yard line, 8 rows from the field, for $90. And if we were a more wealthy show, I would offer to fill all those price points to get people who are willing to go out there for Bears-Browns next Sunday on Christmas Eve to see if the Bears can hold off the 0-14 Browns who lost to the Ravens today, just for the record. Those are the prices. I'll be watching that all week. Adam, before you go, the players like John Fox, do they not? Like, they would, if you polled that locker room right now,
yeah,
would they want him back?
I would say the majority would. I'd be interested to see how the vote would come out, because I think there's got to be players offensively who are frustrated. I would think the wide receivers got to be frustrated with some of the way that they're being used and things like that. But did you guys happen to see the Sam Acho was mic'd up in Cincinnati? Did you happen to see that video?
No.
That was going on. He kind of gave a, you know, in the huddle before the game, during warm-ups or whatever. He motivated them by saying, "Let's play. Do this for the coaches. Do this for the coaches." So they went into that Cincinnati game with that as a mindset, that we're playing this one for the coaches. And they, you know, trounced the Bengals. So, I mean, I think there's actual evidence right there that we saw that they are still playing hard for these coaching staff. And I'll say, look, this team has not quit. You want to see a team that quit? You can look at the Cincinnati Bengals, not just against the Bears, but today against the Vikings, too. That's a team that has stopped playing for their head coach. These guys are still playing hard. They're just not very good.
Yeah, look, the Bengals should be contracted for what they've done the last couple of weeks. I mean, they really should. Marvin Lewis is saying that he's done at the end of the year after 15 seasons, and these guys apparently are, I don't know, boycotting?
Actually, he denied that after the game.
Did he deny it after the game? I didn't see that. Okay, well, he may have denied it, but it's clear that it's coming. So, I mean, they lose to the Bears 33-7. They lost to the Vikings 34-7. Which is like maybe the best stat for the Bears all season. The Bears were within 1 point of the Vikings in beating the Bengals. It's about that's like the best thing they've done all year.
Well, that's how they've played all year. I mean, most of these games have been close, not always well played. They like I said a few minutes ago, they beat the Steelers, beat the Panthers, beat the Ravens, almost beat the Vikings. I mean, they're in a lot of these games. Almost beat the Saints earlier this year. They were in that game. You can make an argument they're not that far away, but they need weapons on offense. They need coaches on offense. They need a lot of things fixed here in the offseason.
Adam, good to be with you, brother. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Appreciate you jumping on.
Hey, can I ask you one quick question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I after the game yesterday, I see all this stuff on Twitter about where you live in Chicago.
Yeah.
Now I grew up in the city.
Yeah.
But I live in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So what am I? Because you never addressed that.
So if somebody asks you, and we can do this coming up after 4 o'clock because it was hot yesterday. If somebody asks you, hey, Adam Hogue, where are you from? I grew up in the city of Chicago. I now live in the suburbs. Harry yesterday was sitting there trying to act like if you grew up in Glencoe and somebody asks you where you're from, that you're from Chicago. And so he's trying to play like he's Chicago tough to me. When you're a suburbanite, you don't have the same street cred growing up in Glencoe that you do if you grew up in whatever neighborhood you want to pick.
I can't wait to jump in on this one.
So, and then people were like saying, you know.
But I actually am from Chicago.
You are from Chicago. So doesn't it bother you when somebody from Highland Park says they're from Chicago and you actually grew up and went to, what'd you go, St. Ignatius?
I will admit that when I went off to the University of Wisconsin and I met a ton of people who said they're from Chicago, they were all from Glenview and Crystal Lake, and they weren't from Chicago.
You're not from Chicago. You're from Crystal Lake. All right, quick time out here. Hoagie, you're the man.
See ya.
Bye, guys.
See
ya.
At 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Sunday. 408 with you till 530. Jared Payton in studio. Thanks to Adam Hogue for jumping on. My name is Mark Carmen. Blackhawks hockey coming up. 5:30 pregame, the Minnesota Wild at the United Center. So yesterday, standard Saturday, Harry Tynowitz in here, and we did a little tribute to the Blackhawks because in the Winnipeg game, first time ever, two players from Illinois, Tommy Wingles and Vinny Hinostroza, both scored a goal. And we were giving away Lou Malnati's. Jared, stay with me here.
I am.
Okay, everybody on the street right now is just loving Jared Payton, which is sweet, by the way. But I want to make sure you get this. So we were giving away Lou Mal's to somebody who said, what was the historic thing? One person called in and said, two people from Chicago scored in the same game. That had never happened before. And that wasn't really accurate. Because one's from Bartlett and one's from Evanston. Two people from Illinois scored. And so we gave Lou Mal's to both, but then it spawned into a conversation, JP.
Yes.
If you're not from the city, can you say you're from Chicago? And my point is, as somebody who grew up in Highland Park, Illinois.
What do you say?
I cannot say. I say that I grew up in the suburbs just outside of Chicago because I don't get that street cred of being in Chicago. Harry, Mr. Glencoe, wants to claim that he's from Chicago. And no. I've talked to a million people like Jen DeSalvo up in news right now who's from Chicago. I don't know her take on this, but I know that she wants to weigh in. So I'm assuming that this is her take, that if you're not from Chicago and you're from the suburbs, you're from the suburbs. And you better clarify that because you don't deserve to say you're from the city.
You can say Chicago area. There was somebody on a local TV show last week that said that she was from Chicago. And when the host asked, she said, well, the host went, oh, what neighborhood? And this woman responds, oh, Evanston. And that's not a neighborhood. That's a suburb.
Right. You're from Evanston.
You say the Chicago area. Or, oh, where are you from? Well, I'm from the suburbs.
Where are you from, Jen?
I'm from Garfield Ridge Clearing area. Are you guys familiar with
that? See, no, I'm not.
Southside.
Yes.
Okay, but when...
I'm from the south side of Chicago. That's another distinction, south side, north side.
Let me tell you both. I'm going to tell you guys something. So when I went to the University of Miami to play football, I got there and everybody would always ask me, where are you from? And instead of trying to say I'm from a suburb of Chicago that they're not going to know, I always just say I'm from Chicago. Now, my teammates, some of them, my good friend Bryant McKinney, who played for the won the Super Bowl championship with the Ravens, played with and drafted by the Minnesota Vikings, would always call me out and still does to this day. He's like, you're not from Chicago. You're from South Barrington.
Right.
And I'm like, whoa, whoa. And so it used to get so heated that the only way that I could justify it was to be like, well... You know, my dad played for the Bears, man. And so, like, everybody knows my last. I can say I'm from Chicago. And that was the only way I could justify it.
By the way, my dad is. Yeah.
Okay. There it is.
Yeah. See? South Barrington and the south side of the city are very different.
I know. But when you're having conversations with people outside, and I travel a lot. So I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm from South Barrington. It's right outside. I don't have that much time to talk to people. I want to get to we need to talk about. I'm from Chicago.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. I love the Windy City.
Right. But like in the athlete culture, I'm not in that, unfortunately.
Yes, you are. Well, you're a tennis player.
God bless you. But I'm not in like that level of conversation. Like if you, like Isaiah Thomas, from Chicago. Mark Aguirre, who was at the DePaul Northwestern game yesterday and got a little shout out. From Chicago. Jared Payton.
Not from Chicago. I know. But if we all see each other and we're talking, that's what we're sitting there, me and Isaiah are talking.
Yeah.
And someone comes up and goes, whoa, two guys from Chicago right there. Isaiah's not gonna be like, no, he's not from Chicago. He's from
He might.
No, he wouldn't.
I mean, the fact that your dad has a school named after him
in Chicago.
Chicago. I mean, you get to say it though.
Yeah, come on, man.
You're allowed to.
I mean, 34 is a whole nother level. I get that.
Wait, so Jeffrey and Marcus Jordan?
Absolutely not.
They can't say
absolutely.
Highland Park.
They grew up in HP.
Their name is on the back of a jersey that is like more Chicago. That should be. You should get some cred for that.
Sure, some. Right? Cred. They grew up in where'd you grow up, Marcus, Jeffrey, Jasmine, Jordan? Let's not forget about
Jasmine. I'm sorry.
We gotta get her in there too. Where'd you grow up? We grew up just outside of Chicago. My dad played for the Bulls, by the way. His name is Michael Jordan, the greatest player to play anything.
And people are gonna be like, why didn't you just say Chicago?
Because
people would say to the kid.
That's fine, but because I'm not a city guy. I grew up on Windy Hill Lane in HP. Mark Harmon named his intramural team at the University of Iowa after the street that I grew up on in Highland Park, Illinois. Windy Hill, where my dad used to hand out Big Mac gift cards for Halloween.
Well, I'll tell you this. It wasn't that, I mean, I'm from South Barrington, okay? I mean, you should see, I mean, you never know how many people were saying four. You had to watch out for the golf balls, man. It was rough.
There's lots of horses and hills there, huh?
Yeah, a lot of horses.
You might as well have been from Alabama.
Right by Gobert's Farm. Do you know where Gobert's Farm is?
I think that my cousins used to live in a house backed up to that farm.
Okay, so then they were pretty close. Whoa, then if that happens, those are big houses.
I mean, I don't know. I was like four when I was there. So
312-981-7200. If you'd like to, can Jared Payton?
No, don't throw me in here. I want to know what people think. You can comment on what I said.
No, but I want to make it about you.
Okay.
Can Jared Payton, who's got one of the most, iconic names in the history of this city. Can he say he's from Chicago, even though he grew up in South Barrington, which is, if there's a
half hour.
We need somebody from,
on a Sunday at midnight.
You know, somebody who went to, like, a Southside Chicago Catholic school, like Macaulay or Queen of Peace, like quintessential Chicago to call in.
I mean, people texting in here from the 847, I always say that I'm from Chicago because if you're in Pittsburgh, nobody knows where Downers Grove is. Sir, I don't know why you would be in Pittsburgh, but let's say you go do a bunch of business in Pittsburgh. I think the honest answer is I grew up just outside Chicago in Downers Grove, the suburb, about a half hour from downtown. That's like, it's only like 10 more words.
That's way
it's like
too
10
many words.
More words.
No, it's not. It's way too many words.
Hey, Bill, welcome to WGN. Talk to JP.
JP, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill.
I used to talk to your dad pretty frequently. I worked at the Dominick's when I was a younger man across the street. And he used to carry you in one arm and push the cart in the other arm so he didn't have to sign autographs. He'd come in at 11 o'clock at night.
Great move.
But your neighborhood has nothing to do with South or with Chicago. That's a beautiful area out there, but yeah, I used to laugh.
I know.
As a matter of fact, I was dating a young Italian girl. And I was going to show her your house, and I drove by, and your mom came out of the driveway so hot she almost T-boned me in a Mercedes.
Hey, that sounds like my mom. I'm going to keep telling. I keep telling her to slow down in these streets of Chicago. Just take Uber now. That's it.
Bill, your dad was great. He used to come in and talk to me every night.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it, man. I knew that. I know that's where I'm gonna. People are gonna go there with me. I'm cool with that. I can take it today. I'm a bigger man than I was when I was in college.
See, I don't think like it's nothing to defend. It's just you just got to own it.
Well, I can't stop it. I will never stop it. I'm always going to say I'm from Chicago because I'm putting on. Anytime I leave this city, I am trying to uphold everybody else in this city. I look at everybody like my family. So Chicago is my family.
Now that is a beautiful thing.
You see what
I have
I'm
a
saying?
Question.
Yes.
Have you ever even owned like a nasty studio bedroom, like one bedroom in Wrigleyville for like a month?
No.
This is Jared Payton.
No.
Doesn't own nasty studio
no.
bedroom.
I never lived in a city. I went to Miami, then to Tennessee, then to over to Amsterdam for a little bit, then to Canada. So I've never, every time that, I've always lived in the suburbs since I've, you know, been in the Chicagoland area.
Wait a second. Before you got married, living in the city, coming back here.
I didn't. No.
Where were you?
I had a place in Tennessee, and I would just come back and kind of find places to stay.
Does your sister live in the city?
Yeah, my sister lives in the city.
She does.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm getting personal with the family.
I can't do it, though. I need more room. I need to park my car in the garage. I want, like, a backyard. That's going to cost you in the city.
Right.
You know? It's going to cost you a little bit.
Okay. Hey, these are great choices. It's interesting though that you're like, I mean, I was like, get me out of HP. I want to live in the city.
Not me. Keep me in the suburbs.
Like I had a great ride in today on the L. I
like going to Woodfield.
Oh,
yeah, I know. Just hanging out.
Yeah, no.
I know all the back streets out there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that I never have to move back to the suburbs. Just let me live in the city. Of course, they're not doing a great job making this city affordable.
You could get one of those dirty old nasty studios.
Where are my kids going to go to school in the city? I better get a credit at Walter Payton.
Hey, guess what? I got a high school with a name on it. I can maybe hook you up.
I didn't even think about that one. I'm good. I'm straight. They're going to Walter Payton Prep. I better test in. As if I like have like I mean.
You don't even know yet. Never know.
I don't. 312-981-7200 if you want to join in the conversation. And can you believe it? Christmas is only a week away, and if you're like most, you still have some shopping left. You got pet shopping over there?
No, I've been online shopping.
Good job. Well, if you haven't, don't worry. Don't panic. There's still time to call Anderson's Candy Shop and catch up. Anderson's does a variety of their hand-dipped chocolate bars, peppermint bark, that English toffee. It's all left in both the Richmond and Barrington locations right around where JP grew up. And if you call ahead, there's still a good chance Anderson's can prepare your orders for the holiday gift baskets in time for Christmas, too. There are even a few more days to have your candy shipped in time for Christmas with express shipping. But don't wait. Henderson's hand their chocolates, and there are only a few production days left here before Christmas. So if you're working during the day, Henderson's has extended evening hours this week. You can shop at any time at andersonscandyshop.com. But get going here. But also don't stress. Just shop Henderson's Candy Shop for delicious stocking stuffers, last-minute gifts. That's andersonscandyshop.com. Or you can call 1-888-214-7614. Because for last-minute shoppers, nothing beats these treats. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. Porter Moser, head coach of Loyola, about 10 minutes from now right here on this very radio station, 720 WGN. Jared Payton in studio. I'm Mark Carmen, talking where you're from. So hot yesterday. I wanted to get your take here. People got fired up, JP.
They should.
You are not from Chicago.
You are
a suburbanite.
I'm cool with that. I mean, it is what it is.
My guy Mitch out there in Twitter land is just torching me, saying another freezing, hot, scorching, calm take. This is a hot take.
It is a hot take.
We are learning right now, Mitch. I see you out there, buddy. Glenn, welcome to WGN, pal. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Love the show.
Thanks, Glenn.
Hey, Jared, buddy. You're a great guy. I love the family, but here's the thing. If your zip code did not begin with 606, sorry, buddy, you're not from Chicago.
I knew that. I knew someone was going to throw in the zip code on me. I knew it. Listen, I'm going to take it, Glenn. I'm with you. I understand. I'm just going to have to figure this thing out, man. I might have to just, literally, I'm just going to have to buy one of those old, nasty, rundown, like, studios just so I can claim I'm from Chicago. I'm dead serious.
Hey,
I'll do it.
You can rent.
Don't feel bad because I grew up right over by there in Bolingbrook, and I get the same heat. So, hey, I know how you feel.
I appreciate it, Glenn.
Thanks, Glenn.
But you're not a Chicagoan.
Thanks, Glenn.
Glenn had to throw that uppercut in there.
I felt so comfortable yesterday with Harry and shouting him down and saying, listen, buddy, Mr. Glencoe, you're Mr. Glencoe. You don't get to claim that you grew up by the UC. But with you, I feel a little guilty because... You know, it's the last name. It's Chicago. It's 3-4.
I mean,
it's 23.
When you think about Chicago, yes, you think about what my dad did. So it's hard not to. So I can kind of throw that in there. People can keep telling me no, but you know what? I'm always, man. The reason why? Because when I leave and go out of town, the respect that I have for this city and what this city has done for my family and just for my life, Man, I hold it up on my back every time I leave. Every day I wake up.
Plus,
it's tattooed on me on parts of my body.
Yeah, and right now you're on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And Channel 9.
You're on Chicago's very own Channel 9. You're also on Chicagoland. Chicagoland.
Land. Television.
It's all about that land. CLTV. You're all about that land.
Just showing how much I work.
I think Joe wants to hook you up here with an exception to the 606 rule. What's up, Joe?
Hey, I grew up in Burnham, which is a south suburb. Our zip code was 60633. So that kind of killed that whole argument that just came from the caller before.
Ooh. Joe with the technicality.
I like you, Joe. Joe, I love that you're getting technical.
A little too technical for me, but that's okay.
Carm, I texted yesterday.
Yeah.
And about this same topic, and I'm expecting every time you announce the sports that when you talk about the Giants and the Jets, you say who are also from New Jersey, not New York.
I remember that text, Joe. Appreciate that, and that's an excellent point.
Joe,
they do.
Joe, you are awesome, man.
They play in Jersey. That's your.
I mean, he is on point. Like, he is someone that I want. Like, I want to work with him.
I'm not sure how that applies, like, exactly to what I'm talking about, but that is worth. It's worth naming, Joe. Appreciate you.
All right, say goodbye from the Chicago Metroland area. Thank you.
See you, Joe. Thank you. I think I've killed this topic.
No, you did not, man. This is great. I wish I was here to kill Harry yesterday, like just thrill him a little bit.
I have another question. Do you guys play dibs in South Barrington?
No.
No dibs?
Oh, I got dibs on this?
No, I'm talking about you shovel your own parking space and you throw a lawn chair in it.
Oh. Well, we have garbage night where we sit outside on garbage night in the summertime and, you know, have a couple of adult cocktails, you know?
Nobody in Barrington shovels their own driveway.
Oh, I still do at my place. I'm not in Barrington, though. I'm not telling you where I'm from, but where I live now. But I'm out in that area, and I do shovel snow.
All right, I want. Will you put a picture of that on Twitter? Because I don't believe you.
I'm dead serious.
You don't have anybody who comes over?
It depends on my work schedule.
If I'm
you know, working late and snow drops, we might have someone come over. But more than likely, I like putting my headphones on, going outside and shovel some snow. Get my steps in for my Fitbit. It's a nice little workout.
Get that tricep workout right there. Get tries and buys, little chest.
I use everything as a workout. My daughter, 20 months, man, I do push-up. I mean, I do bench press with her, make sure I'm getting my guns right.
I do. Now that was real radio right there.
Serious.
I do bench presses with my
daughter.
It's okay. I squat my doggy.
See? I mean, there's workouts like at home. When I'm at home with my daughter on a Friday, you would look at some of these kids. I'm upset that they don't think that dads stay home with their kids. Like, I'm with my kids. It's always mommy, me, and mommy and daughter time. Come on, what about daddy and daughter time?
we got Porter Moser, head coach Loyola, coming right up here. But what did you just say, Jen? I squat my dog?
Yeah. She's about 55 pounds. I lift her up and I do front squats.
Oh, you do
squats.
You do front squats with your dog.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's impressive is what that is. Good job.
Well, thank you.
Props to you. All right, Jen's news coming up in 2 minutes, 720 WGN.
Chioza will inbound it.
There's a quick hitter in the corner.
Just like you called, an air ball. Kulichev missed it. Rebound, fought for. Jump ball with 2.5, and that is going to do it. Loyola has the arrow. And the Ramblers of the Missouri Valley Conference, without that man, Clayton Custer, the entire second half, are going to pull off an unbelievable upset.
That's exactly right. Number 5 in the country, Florida. Don't worry about it. Porter Moser and company are going on the road, and they're taking out the Gators. 10-2, your Loyola Ramblers. And Porter joins us now on 720 WGN. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Jared Payton. And actually, Porter, before we get into your team, we've been having a discussion. If you're from the suburbs of Chicago like you are, Mr. Naperville, and somebody asks you where you're from, are you from Chicago or are you from just outside and a suburb of Chicago?
You know, I've been dealing with this my whole life because I got buddies that live in the city limits, and they will not let you say you're in the city if you live outside the city. So here's my answer. When I've coached in Texas. When I've coached out of state, I say I'm from Chicago. But when I'm from here, when you ask someone where you're from, you got to say I'm from right outside Chicago. That's kind of my golden rule.
Coach, I'm with you. I'm with you, Coach. Listen, I know. You went to Bennett, right? I went to St. Yep. Viter. We got history, so that's all good there. I understand. But there's one thing that I saw. When you start to look at programs that are on the rise, and you always have like signature wins in a season and stuff that kind of elevates your team, but there is a quote of you saying that this is just the beginning for this ball club and for your unit. How do you see and how much better can this team get over time?
Well, I know that paper, that was a headline in one of the papers about a beginning, and I guess what I meant by that is that I don't want it to be like that wasn't our goal, was just to get a big win. You know, we want to sustain it. We want to be a program that's, you know, vying for championships, that's playing in March, that, you know, that young guys want to go to, that because they want to go to an established program. And it takes time to do that. And I think, you know, you got to be successful in all aspects of it. I mean, the academics, everything. And one thing that, you know, I feel that did is it did bring a lot of attention. I mean, it was just crazy this last week. But what I mean by the beginning is that, you know, we want to get better. You know, we feel we can get a lot better. We took a step backwards yesterday. I know we're missing Custer and Richardson, but we feel we still, you know, can beat people with it. But, you know, we've got to continue to learn, continue to get better. And in the beginning, what I mean by that is this is just a part of where we want to go, getting big wins like that on the road or big wins in general. The big picture is to be a successful team in March.
Yeah, yesterday lost to UW-Milwaukee for people that may not be following. That's Pat Ballin's coach of that team who used to play at Northwestern, coaches up with the Panthers now.
You know what, Coach? I totally, and that's what I thought where you were going with that, because it is. It's huge because you have to start off and figure out where some type of little baseline, and then you can go from there. But your guys, you get a win and show you can beat good teams. It kind of gives that confidence to guys in a program that say, listen, we can play with anybody. It seems like that's where a lot of your guys are right now in their mindset.
100%. And you feel like that. And, you know, Custer's a big part of our point guard is a big part of it. I think, you know, I was listening as they did that. They played the end of the game highlight you guys just did. And the announcer said with Custer there on the bench. And so we're confident we can. We didn't yesterday. We didn't do a good job. But, you know, I think in the long run, we're going to be better through these injuries because we've got to get more guys. I think we're going to be deeper in March when we get Custer and Richardson back for that. But, you know, I do think that we're going to be, you know, hopefully deeper when we get everybody healthy back as we're getting guys minutes.
Steve Greenberg did a write-up on you and your squad, Porter, in the Sun-Times this week, which was highlighting attendance and getting people fired up. And you know, I've been to the Gentile Center many times. It's a great place to see a game. But, you know, we're also in Chicago. And I thought it was, and there's so much competition. I thought it was interesting just kind of remembering that you were a kid who grew up here and was rooting for DePaul. And you see how hard it is for DePaul to draw. And they just got a new arena. And I was out there yesterday watching them play Northwestern game right here on 720 WGN. I personally think that there should be a rotating Illinois college basketball December tournament, Loyola, UIC, Northwestern, Illinois, could throw Bradley in there, SIU, who are in your conference, and you just rotate who's hosting it every year, and it's a one weekend, maybe it starts on Thursday to Sunday, and we crown a champion and we build some excitement. Not at the United Center. I think 1 year it should be at Loyola, and the Northwestern should host it. UIC should have it. Why can't we get that done? I'm assuming that you would want that. Am I wrong?
No, you're assuming correct. I would love that. And I think it's helping that we're getting more established. You know, Northwestern has done a great job. You know, I know DePaul's on the rise and you all want them. But I think it helps because, you know, take, for example, Northern Iowa. It used to be state mandated that Iowa State play Northern Iowa and Drake. And now and they used to have to rotate going to their places. Now they actually do it on a neutral site. But they still do it. And, like, because Northern Iowa's good and they've established their program, it's not a bad loss if Iowa State or Iowa lose to Northern Iowa because they're good. And if our RPI is in the top 100, you know, and hopefully it'll be continuing to go up. And that's something where, you know, because some people might say, oh, they don't want to do it because maybe if their RPI is 300, it hurts them. Well, hopefully we can't say that. And I think if you do it at a neutral site also is a positive because I think the United Center is. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, I'm going to be very transparent.
It's too big.
It's too big. It's too big. You got to start at something more neutral, you know, or smaller. And I just think it's healthy. I think it's healthy for people to get excited. But I know it's the conference stuff. I mean, the Big Ten's got 20 games. That's a lot of conference games. You know, who knows if the Valley goes to that? There's been talk with the Valley going to that. So there's a lot of moving parts to get it done, but the thought of it excites me.
Do coaches talk about that? Is that all ADs? I mean, what is that like? Like, is it even brought up? Are you guys just all like in your little cubby holes of you know? I'm over here off the Loyola red line, you know, the red line of Loyola, man. I'm on the purple line of Northwestern. Hey, I'm at the blue line down by UIC. You know, maybe that. I don't know if those conversations even go on.
No, I mean, it's tough to schedule at the mid-major level. It really, really is. And I'm going to give you a great example. And this is, so we played North Carolina State last year. And it was part of, you know, there's a rule in the NCAA in scheduling. You're allowed to play one exempt tournament. And if you play one of those teams that are in the tournament, within a two-week window of the tournament, you can play, it's an extra game. It doesn't count against your mandated number of games. So, for instance, we were in the Paradise Jam with North Carolina State.
Uh-huh.
They really wanted us to play us and buy us to have us come in to North Carolina State within that and not and count as a game, but not as and it could be like an extra game. So they wanted it for their thing. So I negotiated all the way down to the end, and I said, all right, I'll go there, but then you've got to come back to Gentile Arena. And we put in there a very, very, very big buyout. So we went down there last year. We lost by two right at the end. Dennis Smith, lottery pick, had like 34. We lost by two. New coach gets the job, and he's like, I'm not coming to Gentile Arena. He's like, we're buying out. And they paid a very large sum not to play. So then we just went to Florida and got a big paycheck and won. And it's just becoming harder and harder to schedule games, especially to get a home game. And you start winning a couple of those bye games on the road, and it becomes hard to get those. It's just, but my thing, my whole point is this. If your program starts to get established and you're a good RPI game, then it doesn't hurt you. Mm. What hurts a Power 5 conference is to schedule a game to the mid or the so-called mid-levels or the low levels, and your RPI is like 300. I get that. That hurts you. It hurts you to schedule those games. But that's one of the big things that I hope we're establishing at Loyola is now, God, if you start getting into your 100, your top 100, top 50 in the RPI, you know, that's not going to hurt you, you know, to play those games, and that's what we want to get to.
Porter Moser, head coach Loyola, with us here on 720 WGN. Huge win this week, beating number 5 Florida, and congrats. That was just incredibly awesome. I want to ask you. This might put you in a bad spot here, Porter, so, you know, you're a professional, you can handle it either way here. But so, earlier in the year, you had, the scandal in college basketball, stuff going on behind the scenes with the shoe companies and the schools and recruiting and all that, and the National Association of Basketball Coaches comes out, and they act like they're completely in the dark about what's going on at the big-time schools. And everybody knows to a certain extent of how college basketball works, and it's really... You know, and for a mid-major or schools below that, D2, D3, you know, everybody gets along because the money, I guess, trickles down a little bit. But it's like there's an opportunity right now for some real change. And I'm wondering if you think that that's coming or if you think the system is basically going to stay the way it is.
No, I think there's definitely some change coming. And it's for the good. I mean, I think anybody that doesn't think they can, you know, amongst coaches, you know, you kind of know. It's sad, you know, but I'll tell you this. I feel very good about putting my head on my pillow at night. I feel sad. I feel, you know, I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy to come home and tell their family or tell their kids that they cheated. You know how horrible that would be for me to sit around a table and tell my 4 kids I cheated? And I think that's got to stop. I think it's got to be an even playing field. And I think when you start talking about the FBI and jail time, it's not like it's a NCAA penalty. You're talking about jail time and FBI. I think it's more than a lightning bolt through the small percentage of people that are doing this. You know, I don't think it's the majority. I do think it's the, but there is a group that do it at a certain level. And I think it's got to stop. It's got to stop. And if this is what it's caused to help clean that up, then that's a good thing. Because there are so many great things about college athletics. There's so many great things college coaches are doing. But this is a scar. This is a major problem that is hopefully going to start moving in the direction of cleaning up.
I mean, Coach,
no doubt.
Coach, you speak on it, and it's so true. I mean, we're talking about basketball. We know how deep it goes, runs there. But even playing football and being around in college and playing, you see things from all different angles, and it's tough. But the one thing that it seems like for you that you can rest easy at night is that you go out and get guys that are not only coming in as, you know, just as basketball players, but you're trying to develop them as young men as well. How have you seen that with the recent guys? Because reading that story, it talks about you bringing in kids from high school that were winners, and that seems like it's starting to change things around just a little bit.
No doubt about it. You got to have a certain philosophy of how you're going to build your program. And one of the things that, you know, I love about my job at Loyola, you know, is I, you know, like you said, I went to Bennett, I played at the Jesuit school at Creighton, and just the atmosphere. You've got to have the whole package for me. And I want good kids. I tell my assistants, they look at me, I go, I'm greedy. I go, I want a great kid that's quick, that can shoot, that's a good student. And I'm like, but you've got to, you know, if you want to have culture, you've got to recruit culture. You know, you just don't, you know, and I think we recruited kids that have won before. I recruit kids, and I'm not saying when a kid gets here, he's not going to make a mistake. But I can tell you going in, knowing it, we're targeting certain type of character kids. And just like your own kids, they might make a mistake along the way. But I think we want to have a program of character. I think that, and I just, I'm so proud of the kind of guys we have in our program. And I've said that a lot this last week because I've
done a lot of interviews and everything, and I'm so proud of the Dante Ingrams, the Ben Richardsons, all the guys that are the kind of guys we have on our team and who they are. And I think that's one of the biggest things when people meet our guys, they're like, wow. I mean, and that's what I love about it, building this program with that kind of person.
Well, I'm Porter. I'm, you know, when you first got to Loyola, that's the first time I met you, and I've always been impressed by you, and I'm rooting for you guys. And, you know, you go back to, like, Al Frederick Hughes. When I was a kid, I mean, I was always a huge Northwestern fan. My dad, like, somehow just ingrained that into me, and I remember going to Alumni Hall when they were refurbishing McGall Hall and watching Andre Good and Art Aaron, and Al Frederick Hughes was rolling, and you had, you know, back in those days, it was Kenny Patterson, and then it was Lightning Rod Strickland came to DePaul, and Dallas Comegys, all of it. And it was awesome, and I don't know if it can ever get back to that, but I do think that there is, like, an opportunity. You got the new Wintrust Arena, which would be, I think, the best place right now to play the tournament if you're going to pick one spot, because it's, you know, it's 11,000 and whatnot. But anyway, I would just love, I think a lot of people would enjoy that. The basketball fans would show up. You put three games in a day, fill it up, it'd be awesome. And you guys, by the way, I should say, open up conference play Friday night at Missouri State. And then the next home game is Saturday the 30th with the Purple Aces. Go on out to the Gentile Center. Great food right around there. I always eat well when I'm in the area. A lot of choices.
Yeah.
So that's my pump for Loyola Hoop. And I look forward to coming out.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much. Yeah, please come out and see us. We're a fun team to watch. But hey, thanks for having me on.
It was our pleasure, Porter. Good. Best of luck the rest of the way this year.
Take care, Coach.
All right, take care, guys.
Porter Moser, your head coach of your Loyola Ramblers. Love that guy.
Love him to death. It's just that thing when you talk to him, you got to call him Coach. Like, I can't call him anything but Coach.
Great energy. By the way, shout out to Bill Behrens out at Loyola, who's maybe the most dedicated employee / fan of the Ramblers, too. Who's doing always doing great work, keeping everybody informed what's going on. So there's a lot of great people around Loyola. I'd love to see them get in the tournament. I would love to see a little Chicago action.
Why not?
I mean, I'm at Northwestern DePaul yesterday. I wanted to kill the Blue Demon fans. I'm sitting there rooting for the Wildcat. It's fun. It's good to have the purple right there, the blue right there. Give me some Rambler.
In-state rivalries, Come on, get it going. Let's get these games going.
That's the beauty. And I love DePaul.
You and I could get this thing rolling if you really want to.
Maybe we can get that done.
Let's do it.
I mean, you're the side deal
for us.
You're the master promoter. I mean, you got like seven different brands going on over there.
Get it maybe on, you know, broadcasting on radio, WG.
Right, right.
Why not?
Why not? Why not? All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN. So I just want to read one quote that I was mentioning in the Porter Moser. Thanks again for joining us, Porter Moser from Loyola. The National Association of Basketball Coaches, their executive director, his name is Jim Haney, Jared Payton.
Yes.
All right, when all the allegations came down of... And four coaches were under investigation, including like Chuck Person and Rick Pitino. A lot of scandal going on. This is what Jim Haney, their director at the time, said. Quote, Tuesday's allegations of recruiting improprieties across the college basketball landscape have shaken the game and the coaching profession to the core. As role models and leaders of young men, we hold ourselves to the highest standards of lawful, ethical behavior on and off the court. These actions, if proven true, are not indicative of the character of the greater college coaching community, and we remain confident in our NABC members. Dude.
Come on.
Jim, come on. Come on, man. These allegations are not a surprise to many of us who have ever followed college basketball.
It's been going on forever.
And it's about time that we finally come clean and go for some real change. And level the playing field and not be so caught up in all the money versus what's right for the kids and what's best for the game. So moving forward, I'm going to do everything in my power to support our coaches, not just at the very top of the profession, but also the ones who are making $25,000 a year.
Yeah.
Who are great role models for their kids at Division III schools just starting the game and trying to raise 18, 19, 20-year-olds into better young men or better young women. Now, that would be a cool statement. Shook it to the core like we all of a sudden, you just got hit out of the blue, dude. Come on, man.
So much money being made, man.
So much money.
That's what it all comes back down to. That's why you overlook things that are going on that you know, just hoping and praying. That's what they do, that they don't come out into the forefront, but...
Instead, it's like,
what's done in the dark will come out in the light, man.
We are right.
Right?
Right.
You can, I mean, they're making money hand over fist, the NCAA is, man.
His statement, if he was being honest, look, we are so far deeply embedded with the shoe companies and TV and our signature programs that we have no intention of changing whatsoever, and we hope that this latest scandal will blow over as fast as possible and people will never talk about it again, and we continue to be the cash cow that we are while we have weird rules that like one and dones, and try to take as much advantage of our student athletes as possible to make us as much money as possible. And I hope that Rick Pitino makes $7 million a year like he so deserves. Somewhere along those lines. Come on, man.
Come on.
Come on. You asked a question in the commercial, like we started talking Star Wars. I haven't seen it.
I'm not a Star Wars guy.
I liked it I liked The Empire Strikes Back, the first two, the first real two as a kid. Return of the Jedi was okay. I heard it sucked. There's a lot of reviews out there that are positive, but from the people that I hang out with, they thought the movie was terrible. So you want to text us 312-981-7200. I'm just curious if people have gone out and seen it and what they think.
I've seen it. Reviews all over the board, but I've heard a lot of people on my Twitter feed saying they loved it.
Today I got some rousing. It was awful. Jen DeSalvo, you seen it? You seen a little Star Wars up there?
Oh, opening night.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thursday at 7 p.m.
And?
Oh, I loved it.
See?
I totally loved it. I definitely thought it was better than the 7th movie. And I need to go back and see it again.
See, I need to get caught up. I'm so bad with that.
There is a significant split going on here. I mean, I got like hardcore people saying it was awful. Not even close to as good as the 7th one or whatever. Is this the 8th one?
Yeah, I mean, I can honestly say though, I'm not one of those people who has followed every nuance in the Star Wars universe and all the little things throughout all of the films. I've just been a fan who's brought it in for entertainment.
Yeah.
So that might be my difference in opinion.
Such a balanced Jen DeSalvo. Just solid way you go about your life up there in the newsroom. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
And it was a lot of fun, by the way. You missed a scavenger hunt the other day, JP. I was on Jen's team. We were taking pictures on toilets. We were all drinking out of the same iced tea.
Yeah, we were eating gummy bears from each other's hands.
It was aggressive.
And we also won $50 Amazon.com gift cards. Oh, wow. Woohoo!
Yep,
that's what I'm talking
Me,
about.
Me, Jen, Andy Mazur.
Oh, Maze?
Mary Vandeveld. Oh. And who am I forgetting?
Lisa Wolf.
And Lisa Wolf. How could I possibly forget Lisa Wolf?
It was a power team.
It was. We were hot. I mean, we were committed. It hurt to come in second, but
weird. You guys eat gummy bears out of each other's
hands? You had to go to the candy store.
It was incredibly weird, but I didn't know Mark until that day, and now he's my BFF.
See? It was a whole change right there.
He's such a loving guy.
Seconds on the shot clock now. Jordan lost the ball for a second, but now the clock is running down. Green. Jordan for three. Chicago Bulls with a huge 9-point lead now.
.720 WGN. He just missed that highlight. It's too bad. Vincent Goodwill just put on hold, but I just played him. Michael Jordan trolling Isaiah Thomas in the Detroit Pistons moment. Huge three, 1990. God, it made me feel good, even if you didn't hear it, Vincent Goodwill. That's the way I like to bring you on WGN, because, you know, those were the days when basketball was its best and MJ was finally getting past the Pistons, and I was young, and I'll always remember it, and I'll always celebrate it. How are you, Vincent? Good to have you.
That is a nice, long, and satisfying, it appears to be, intro. For you, I hope it was as orgasmic for you as it appeared.
It was. I was searching through, like, we got to play something for him. Let me see what we got. It was the three. He was angling left around a screen, hits the three, and then he's running back and he's screaming at everybody in the building. I believe it was like a game six, which the Pistons actually won that series in seven. But that's neither here nor there. Vincent Goodwill, Comcast Sports, that you are here today because the Chicago Bulls have won five in a row. and I'm all about that playoff push. I am weirdly excited about watching this team right now, and I see Chris Dunn getting better. I see Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic getting to a level in their relationship that it's actually like both of them trying to prove something to each other on the court, and they're both playing great. And we got a Zach LaVine coming back. Eight and 20 is a long way away from the playoffs, but I think the Bulls are actually doing good things right now.
Okay, playoff push. All right, let's
playoff push, man. Playoff push.
Let's start first on the inaccuracy of the Jordan highlight that you were talking about. If I remember correctly, that was game 3 of the 90 conference finals where the Pistons had a 16-point lead and decided to just say that we're going to sweep the Bulls and they can stop playing. And it wound up turning into a 7-game war. But to go back to your...
You're right. You're absolutely correct. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yes, I'm always right. Now, to go to your original point about the Chicago Bulls, yes, they're playing... And it's funny you talk about how the individuals are coming across. They're playing an aesthetically pleasing brand of basketball. Like, you're starting to see some of the basic tenets of Fred Hoiberg's vision. The simple fact, honestly, that these guys are playing hard for them. Whether that's on an individual basis, whether that's on a collective thing where guys have something to prove. Like, people forget when you're talking about Nico and Bobby individually, yeah, there's some stuff going on, but Bobby is in his third year. Bobby is going to be coming up on restricted free agency soon. You're talking about a guy who hasn't gotten paid and is basically motivated by the prospect of advancing his career no matter where it is. So I'm not as surprised at the individual motivations. I can say that I am a little bit surprised at the effectiveness that Bobby, Nico, the advancement of Chris Dunn, all these other sort of individual factors are actually working in concert. And they're actually translating, you know, into wins. I mean, some of these things are going to be a function of the schedule, but some of these things you actually have to give the Bulls a little bit, maybe even a lot of credit for how they play.
I mean, to go up to Milwaukee, I mean, that's a playoff team all day. And Giannis had a big night, and Markkanen didn't play. I'm not, you know, I'm obviously when I say playoff push, I'm being hyperbolic, and it's not going to happen. But
I would hope so.
Yes, I'm way more interested now than I was at 3-20 about what they look like. My main interest at 3-20, the only thing I wanted to watch every night was Chris Dunn and see if he was making positive steps. And you started to see signs of it where the jump shot looked better. He's hitting 18-foot step back, little pull-ups, and it's like, okay. And that's a guy that the Bulls have obviously liked for a long time. They liked him when he was coming out of college, and they liked him enough to trade Jimmy for him, and obviously they wanted everybody else in that deal too. But like that to me, that's a guy who could be a transcendent player on both ends of the court. There's a lot of talent there. Any of that ring untrue to you?
Well, transcendent, I guess it depends on your definition of what you call transcendent. But
over the top on that. But a guy that could be leading your franchise. I don't know if he's going to have the ball in his hands a ton. And just sort of the ability, I think, to create what this team is about is going to run through him. That's how I'm seeing it.
No, I agree with you to some degree about Chris Dunn. A, because the progress has been so rapid. Like, if anybody would have said, what's the best case scenario for Chris Dunn this year, it would be for him to look like this in April when the season is winding down to sort of give you some hope headed into the next season. At least, headed into the draft where you feel like that you have your point guard for the future and you don't have to keep going through this merry-go-round that they seem to have since they traded Derrick Rose. And that at least, you didn't have to worry about that headed into the draft as a position of need. So do I think that he's completely solid up? I can't say that, but you've got to admit, and at least I've admitted it, because, you know, in the beginning when he was doing the behind-the-back passes, you know, that wound up in the first row and during crucial parts of the game, I wasn't seeing it. And I was just seeing a guy that wasn't as confident all the time that he needed to be and didn't make the smart plays in the way that he needed to make smart plays, you know, at that position. Now, I think you're at a much better place, at least, from being able to evaluate the position looking forward. You got to give Fred Hoiberg some credit. You got to give him some credit for, you know, coming back from that beatdown he took last year at the hands of Tom Thibodeau and remaking himself and basically turning back the clock on his confidence.
Yeah, I guess it changed for me with Chris. I mean, I was at the Charlotte game. He shot 10 for 16. He was chasing Kemba Walker around, who had a huge night. It was one game the Bulls won. And granted, the next night he went out and shot 1 for 11 against the Thunder. So there was, or two, the night before that, he had shot 1 for 11 versus the Thunder. So it was like, okay. But then he just, I wouldn't, if I'm a point guard going up against Chris Dunn, that dude is, he is broad, he's fast, he's got some strength, and it's about getting the jump shot down and also the decision making that you just mentioned. But there seems to be a lot of want there. And I loved it against the Bucks the other night when he got all fired up, hitting a huge shot, and just the excitement that he was showing. I think that was the Bucks game. Maybe it was the one game before that. Regardless, there was
Utah.
Yeah, against Utah. My bad. Against Utah, he had two huge shots in the last a minute 30 of that game. And I'm like, okay, like there's a lot of want there, and which obviously you have to be on that level. But I like it. He's winning me over, and I guess he's doing the same for you a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but be impressed, because if you walked in looking at his stats last year, and if you looked at, you know, the way that he played, probably in the limited time that people who just watched the NBA at large probably viewed him, you didn't see a guy who was a continuation of his college tape. You didn't see a guy who played confidently, who played with emotion. You got to think, to display that emotion, you've got to have a certain level, you know, of confidence being on the floor. You know, so to me, it was like those two things are working hand in hand. Like, clearly, you know, he was shooting out a few expletives during that thing. If you can read lips, I'm sure there are people who can tell you, Mark, exactly what he said, but I can't say it on these FCC-sanctioned airways.
Good job, Vincent.
But to go back to it, he and you said earlier that the greatest era was the Jordan era, and there's a player who came right before the Jordan era who people said that Chris Dunn reminds them of, and it was Michael Ray Richardson, you know, who was really talented and really gifted, you know, and had some drug problems in the 80s and everything else.
Of course.
And he plays with the same type of flair and confidence and, you know, tricky with the ball and everything else. And you can sort of see that, you know, with Chris Dunn. And as long as he's playing aggressive, you know, I think that's going to carry him through a lot of mistakes that he's going to make. He's not going to be best at assist to turnover ratio. He's going to turn the ball over a few times, but as long as the bad is outweighing the good, and as long as if you're the Bulls, and this is the third piece of that Jimmy Butler trade, the third piece, not necessarily a throwaway, but the third piece, the wild card, so to speak. And if he turns out to be a capable starter, you have to feel a lot better about that trade than I did maybe on draft night.
What do you know about Lauri Markkanen and his back? Is this a real concern, or is this just they're being careful, cautious, all that?
I think they're being careful and cautious because they're kind of saying the same things. You know, he's going through, you know, he's going through a practice, or he's not. He's getting treatment, you know, and he's doing different things. I'm not terribly concerned, and I don't think there's a huge rush on it or whatever. Like, I think here's my theory. I think not only did he play a lot of basketball with the, you know, with the national team and, you know, everything else, and playing a lot of basketball probably for the first time in his life, I think you're probably dealing with a kid who may be still experiencing growth spurts. And that's usually what happens when, you know, sometimes you come to the league so young, your body is still growing, your body is still acclimating itself, you add the games to it, and then calm your, you know, like a guy like Tracy McGrady, his rookie year, he grew 2 inches. Kobe Bryant, his rookie year, grew 2 inches. Like, they're not far removed from being in puberty. Yeah, I know it's crazy to say because they're, you know, professional athletes, but facts are facts, man.
Yeah, no, hey, listen, I was a sophomore in high school and still waiting for the time to come, so I can relate here. I'm right there. Me, Lori, Kobe, you know. That's,
I'm still working on it.
Vincent Goodwill, Comcast Sportsnet with me, at V Goodwill on Twitter. Follow him, but, you know, if you do go at V, he's going to come back at you. Just know that, so... I like how you do it. All right, I want to ask you about a guy who's in his 15th year in the league, and he's having arguably his best regular season to date. And LeBron James is up; he's shooting near 60%. He's pulling triple doubles, borderline nightly. And the Cleveland Cavaliers are, what are they, won now 17 of 18. And Kyrie Irving's in Boston. Now, I think the Cavs roster is still very good, obviously, but you know, Isaiah Thomas hasn't played yet. What's your thoughts on LeBron right now and what he's doing and where this is going to put his legacy? Because this is ridiculous, and I've always enjoyed talking to LeBron, being around LeBron, watching LeBron, but I also have that Michael thing going on where it like pains me to compliment him. But this is preposterous, and it deserves to be mentioned.
No, it is preposterous and deserves to be mentioned, the numbers. The fact that he's shooting so well at this advanced stage of his career. Normally guys, when they start losing, you know, when they start losing things, you lose your legs first. Even when you saw Michael in his later years, even headed to the Washington years, his jump shot got a little more flat. As he gained weight, as the miles on his body started to pick up a little bit more, he lost a little bit of trajectory on the jump shot. That hasn't happened with LeBron. That jumper isn't flat. His body isn't flat. He's playing at such a high level that for year 15, I can't think of a guy. And, you know, you're talking about a guy like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who I think people forget about when you're talking about greatest players ever. You know, he was still highly effective, you know, well into year 16, 17, but he wasn't this. You know, and LeBron James being, let's see, I turned 33 last week, so he'll be 33 at the end of this year. Ain't too many 33-year-olds in this league's history that can say that they are basically playing their best basketball. The best Michael Jordan basketball came between the years of 1989 and 1993, basically between the years of 25 and 29. And LeBron James is arguably playing the best basketball of his career. And we're not even talking about a stretch where he won the MVP 4 out of 5 years, say, for that 1 year where that kid from Chicago got, you know, the sympathy vote. So, it's amazing. It's utterly amazing that we are sitting here talking about this guy. And to me, I don't think he's catching Michael per se, but I think he is definitely, if we're doing non-center, he might be the greatest basketball player not named Michael Jordan.
I mean, here is his comments today. Nick Friedel's got a piece at ESPN.com. Team success is always the number one, but along the way, if you're able to accomplish some individual awards, individual achievements, it mean a lot. This is from LeBron. I feel good. This is my 15th year. This is one of the best years I've had as far as how I feel, and I want to continue that. I want to try to break the mold for the next generation. Just take the narrative out. Okay, you're past your prime when you're 31. Hopefully I can break the mold so when the next guy comes, he can still get $200-300 million when he's 33 years old. The dude's trying to break the mold, and I don't have a lot of time here left. Blackhawk hockey's coming up, but that's a ridiculous quote. He is. He's breaking the mold. No one. I mean, he's 6'8", he's fast, he's strong. And he's in his 15th year, and he's shooting 58%. I mean, that's bananas. Last question. Nico and Bobby at the trade deadline, are they both here after? What do you think?
No. I think Nico's gone. I think Bobby's safe.
Okay. All right.
I think Aaron was well before the trade deadline.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And by the way, my contention on this, we don't have a lot of time here, but if Nico was well liked in that locker room and respected, he never would have been hit in the face. If that was D Wade, if that was Jimmy Butler, and Bobby had a problem with him, he ain't hitting him in the face. That was 100% personal, and it was.
Well, there's a certain level of respect that a guy has based off of their standing in the league and everything. There's some, you know, I mean, look, man, you've been going head to head against a guy for 3 straight years, and y'all basically have been trying to compete for minutes. So it's a lot going on to that besides everything that we've seen discussed on the surface, at least in my opinion.
Right. Well, they both deserve credit the way they've come back to the team and playing the way they are. Vincent, you're the best. I appreciate you. Thanks for jumping on.
Hey, no problem, Carl.
Vincent Goodwill, Comcast Sportsnet. Always love talking hoop with them. Read him. It's NBC Sports Chicago. All right, Play Ball, Celebrate the Cubs with Team Memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. And also a reminder that the Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive, patient-centered healthcare experience at their family medicine clinic, speech-language institute, physical therapy institute, dental institute, and Eye Institute. At their clinics, you're going to receive quality care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That is 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for health care. Blackhawks hockey is coming up. The Hawks going for five in a row. The Minnesota Wild at the United Center. And, of course, the Blackhawks very much trying to get as many points as possible to get back into the playoffs and build it from there. Corey Crawford called the game against Winnipeg the other night on Thursday night the best game that they played all season long. So tonight another big one with Minnesota coming in. Chris Bowden's got your pregame about 4 minutes from now. And, of course, John and Troy on the call. I am taking a little siesta this week off to the old Mexico. I will not be bringing Arnold the Duck. For those who have followed my duck stuffed animal escapades, he will be in the city. I'm going to trust that he will remain safe and sound here.
He's been through enough.
He's been through enough, right, Dan? I can't be taking my duck to Mexico, even though I really do want to take my duck to Mexico. And my car, which people keep on asking me about, thank you so much. I got my car stolen on Thanksgiving night because I was an idiot and left it running in a gas station, and it ended up with a bunch of damage. It's in the middle of a 22-day repair. I'll get it sometime next year. Don't have it back yet, but it is being fixed, and I'm fine. The duck's fine. Everyone's cool. So I just want to wish everybody Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Hanukkah going on right now. Look forward to talking last week of the year. I'll be doing some fill-in stuff and, of course, my regular stuff on the weekends here with The Beat and Hamp and OB with Cos. We'll be with you next Christmas Eve, Sunday at 3 o'clock after the Bears and Browns. Enjoy Blackhawks hockey, the Hawks and the Wild. They are next on 720 WGN.